and welcome to Mental Health Insights. My name is Craig. I am your host, and here with me today is Nicole and Pete. So this is going to be part of our trauma series, and in this series, we're really trying to kind of come around full circle. So what we talked about so far is what trauma is, what happens in the brain, and some of the issues that it causes, and we also talked about how trauma affects us, not only so many different areas of our brain, but how it affects the way that our body responds and the way that our body is able to receive signals from our environment and the brain itself. So what we're going to do to kind of come around full circle is, how can we address trauma? Now, so we are three therapists that are in the room. We're going to be talking about this when our clients come into our office and we are working with them to help resolve the trauma that's going through. We know that trauma affects so many different areas of our life. And even just so far in our trauma series, we've only started to scratch the surface of what that looks like. But we as therapists, whenever they come in, we have different ways of being able to help them resolve trauma in a very safe manner. And these are there's a lot of similarities in them, and we'll talk about those because those are key, but there's also a little bit of differences in the way that we can do trauma therapy because people are different and people respond to things a little bit differently. So one of the things that, or a couple of things we want to talk about today is we're going to talk about probably, I would say, one of the biggest parts of trauma therapy that we know of in the field, or at least what I would say, I don't know, you guys might be able to dispute that, is EMDR, right? So
desensitization and reprocessing.
There we go. I can never say desensitization. So we'll start with, I think we could start with EMDR, or do you guys think that it would be more helpful to start with kind of like another modality or like somatic experiencing or anything?
I think EMDR is helpful because I think it's a great baseline. It's evidence-based, which a lot of insurance companies love to have, but I think there's some real benefits to it. I think it's a foundational mind-body type of therapy, so I think it's a nice piece. It's been around since about 1989. And so what's wonderful about it is it's really considered bottom-up processing. And I think that's the key when we're thinking about some of the traditional talk therapies are dealing more with the prefrontal cortex and like talk therapy. This is engaging that amygdala for the fight, flight, or freeze. It's engaging the memory centers and the hippocampus. It's addressing that, you know, polyvagal theory, and it's also connecting to our feelings and body sensations.
Yeah, so whenever we're talking about the difference from top down and bottom up, what we're kind of meeting as therapists is that if you're talking top down, just like Nicole said, whenever we're talking, we're really using the more advanced parts of our brain, where a lot of cognition ends up happening. And what is shown is that whenever you're especially dealing with trauma, that's really kind of the ass backwards way to do it. Right, we need a bottom-up approach, which bottom-up approach can be addressing the body first or more like primitive areas of the brain first. Even though I say primitive, I don't even like that word because it kind of almost makes you feel like they're not as important, which no, they're the most important parts. And starting with those areas and working up to the cognitions, working up to the thinking and the different thoughts and stuff surrounding that. And that is shown to be a lot more effective whenever we're talking about trauma and actually a lot of different emotional issues.
Yeah, I like to think of it as primal, because primal is more related to survival in my head when I think about it. And the idea really being that when we're in a survival mode, which is what happens with trauma, is we get stuck in survival mode, that the body is always going to win out because our autonomic nervous system is hardwired for survival first and thinking second. The thinking part of the brain gets turned off in that space. So when we can come at therapy from that perspective, we're actually meeting clients more with where the issue lies and helping them move that energy up into the head and integrate the body and the brain together. That's the idea with these types of therapies.
Like I said, that I want to start using the primal areas of the brain. First things first, let's just talk a little bit about EMDR, right? How it works. I think from my experience with it, so I'm not an EMDR practitioner, but as another therapist said, the way that I understand it is one of the primary things with it is the bilateral stimulation. So I'd like you guys can kind of talk with me through it from that point. Is that okay?
So I'll just start with it's an 8-phase model. And so in the beginning, a couple things you're going to do to prep your client, of course. So there's a lot of work on the front end, kind of having that rapport with them, making sure they feel safe. You're going to do what's called safe containment.
Yeah, safety is a big thing with trauma.
Very important with trauma clients. So that's one component. The second piece of that is really to install some of those nurturing or protecting figures, some of those things that they might need. And what's really important that I do a little bit differently than some other people is, you know, not just a nurturer when you were 10, is that nurturer still safe for you at different ages? It's very important to look at development.
So mom was safe for me whenever I was 10, but now she really nags me all the time.
Or is damaging, or is an alcoholic, or is, you know, dangerous for me. So it's really important to kind of discuss and differentiate all those components
for
your clients.
What's caretaker for you at different points in your life?
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So that would be kind of the front end of it. And then you're going to pick a particular, either a body sensation or a situation or a belief that you might have. You want to be careful with belief. You want to target it and be a little more concrete with it. And then there would be a positive and a negative cognition that are involved in that and what you'd like it to be. And so what happens is you kind of tap into that. So you allow that negative neural network to open up. And once that's open, then we start connecting.
Negative neural network.
Yes.
I know you want to use some of those words, all right?
So I can't help myself.
Yeah, if I'm somebody that's listening to this, I'm like, what is a negative neural network? Help me understand.
So in our networks, we have neural networks. Think of the tree kind of from some of our previous podcasts. And so, you know, up and down that vagus nerve is the root. And so as we have these experiences, it's like running on that highway back and forth in circles. That's my negative experience. And they're chemically charged in the amygdala, so we never forget. So there's a body sensation involved in that. So an example would be you're listening to a song and something bad happened when that song was on. You're never going to forget it.
I got into a car accident when that song was on.
Right, absolutely.
So that would be the negative neural network that gets hardwired into you.
Yeah. And so then we also have the auditory, and then we have all the physical sensations from the car hitting. All these different components of that trauma become fragmented in different places in the brain. So what happens is when we start bilaterally stimulating, it opens up the left and right hemisphere. So there's a little section kind of in the middle called the cingulate gyrus, and that's very important. We've talked about in another podcast. It's kind of like a gear shift in a car, and it gets very stuck. So what EMDR does is allows us to open up different components so these parts start talking to one another, and then it starts freeing up the sensations and the thoughts, and so it moves up to that bottom-up process.
So just a reminder, for those of you, some of you that may have been listening, haven't listened to our other trauma podcast, gosh, you went all the way back to like brain basics with that one.
Sorry.
But that's okay. So that was podcast number one. But when we're talking about the bilateral stimulation, trauma gets us, you know, I think this is even the word that you used whenever we weren't recording as a stuck, right? So whenever the trauma causes this fragmentation and there are different areas of the brain, those areas of the brain aren't communicating. In fact, typically the brain will only communicate through these, you know, this wiring that's in the center or the wiring on the outside. It's typically if you're like you're dreaming. So what this bilateral stimulation is helping to connect those pieces by, I want to say forcing, but I don't know if forcing is the right word.
Integrating
or like
a great
allowing
word.
The process to happen. I like that better. That feels better. Allowing the process to happen because it's not happening in that way. So kind of giving space for it too.
Yeah, it's actually opening up the pathways to communicate with each other where normally they wouldn't, except when we get into that trauma response where only parts of them communicate and we're not able to think clearly through it. We're not able to understand it or make sense of it, but we're just being reactive. So again, you hear the song and all of a sudden I feel my body tense up. I'm feeling scared. I'm tight. I'm waiting for something to happen, even though there's nothing really happening in the moment. With bilateral stimulation, I'm able to actually experience that in a way that potentially allows me to understand it, see it from a distance, perhaps, make sense of it and integrate it more in the long-term memory and remove that place in the amygdala where it gets stuck. so that there's no more activation, there's no more triggering that occurs. We don't lose the memory, we just lose the impact that it has on us.
Yeah, I think that's really important the way you say that. Like whenever the experience becomes fragmented, we can run into it at all different types of places and it can be triggered really easily. And through this process of EMDR and the bilateral stimulation, it's allowing those channels to open up. And with the work that you do on the front end with EMDR, creating a lot of safety and having these different spots that you can go to that allow that safety and allow you to look at some of those memories that are safe and allows you to go to that maybe more dangerous place where those negative neural networks are taking root and experience them in a different way than you did before, which helps rewire the brain to experience the entire thing differently. You don't actually lose the memory, but you experience the memory differently, which is key with trauma.
Yeah, I think that's really important how you experience it. So you have the memory, but it's not that physical reactivity. I love that he said that. And as I think of that, we're kind of marinating these positive neural networks. We're kind of setting it up for that so we can sit in a little longer. So with bilateral, what's happening, it's very similar to REM sleep. The eyes are moving left to right for long periods of time, and that's what's connecting into the actual anatomy of the brain, down into the body where it all connects.
It's funny because REM sleep is one of the few times that you get global activation,
right.
And then all of a sudden, like, the brain can communicate with different parts that it's not usually typically communicating with. So it's so interesting. I don't know if you guys find this. I know that you guys are big trauma junkies and you guys do a lot of research and everything into it, that every time that you guys look at things, you're like, oh, wow, the body had a way of doing this, or this animal had this way of doing this, or there is this thing that naturally occurs in nature that has this way of addressing this. And it seems like, man, if we would have just been paying attention to dreams, like, we would have actually seen a portion of EMDR happening.
Yeah, I like the way you said that, because the idea behind EMDR is it's tapping into the brain's subconscious or more natural way of the way the brain can create healing or allow us to facilitate healing. That's essentially what we're opening up. We're opening up the capacity for healing naturally in the brain, and we're doing it in the safe space of a therapeutic environment.
Yeah, I think a important thing is that the brain is always trying to resolve the trauma, which is why it keeps coming up. It keeps coming up, you get overwhelmed, creates those negative neural networks like Nicole was talking about earlier, and creating this process that works in therapy with some of the work that you guys do and the other practitioners do, being able to provide that safe place so that you can really expedite the process instead of the brain going through the natural state of, all right, this is just going to happen over time. Well, gosh, that could be 30, 40 years, and it may never actually happen, depending on how fragmented your brain is and like how strong these negative neural networks are. So it's just so impressive to me, even like hearing you guys talk a little bit about it, about how we're able to tap into this and the safety that you guys are able to create, how that's able to create such big change through this process that's already been built into us to help us rewire in these moments. This is a really cool thing. I almost wish I could watch a video of it, actually.
Yeah, I wish I could have a picture for everyone to see. I look at SPECT imaging, so that's more about the blood flow in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
What's fascinating to me is Daniel Amen's clinics have some really awesome brain imaging that people can take a look at before and after EMDR or different disorders that people have. So there's one particular picture that comes to mind. It's one rape, so it's not a complex trauma. Two sessions of EMDR was equivalent to, if not better, results than 20 to 25 sessions of cognitive behavioral therapy. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible.
Which is
the rapid
top down approach.
Right. So the speed of recovery is so much faster for clients. It's just a really wonderful tool. It's one of my favorites, but again, it's foundational. I think as we talk about some of the bottom up and some of the body sensations and the polyvagal and those primal instincts, I think it would be really important to talk about somatic experiencing.
Yes, and I think that this is probably a pretty good platform to go from there.
Well, before we do that, I'd like to touch a little bit on another bilateral stimulation methodology that I use called accelerated resolution therapy, which is very similar to EMDR, but it actually incorporates a couple of other things, memory reconsolidation and a little bit of somatic experiencing in it, which again we can touch on in a few minutes. But accelerated resolution therapy sprung out of EMDR, and the founder of it decided that there were some tools that she naturally fell upon when doing EMDR that she found made EMDR a little bit more impactful and a little bit more quick. The resolve was a little bit faster because she was using metaphor in the EMDR process, if you will, or the bilateral stimulation, very much like we do in dreams and helping people to, as they're going through the processing, create metaphors to reshape the memory in a way that feels comfortable and good for them so that it uncouples or removes that, the way that it gets trapped in the amygdala, a little bit faster and allows them to move it out. They remove the memory from that place, but they don't lose the actual data of the memory. It just, they get a resolution, in some cases faster than traditional EMDR.
So, like, listening, just to kind of make sure that I'm on the same page to you, if I'm someone that's listening to this, I'm like, okay, memory reconsolidation. So, bringing the memory up and having this different way of looking, different way of experiencing, a way that would be probably more preferable, right, is the way of bringing it out and then allowing that to be the memory that you go to, allowing yourself to experience that in that different way is a way of reconsolidating that memory so that you still have the data of the old memory, but the experiences of the newer one. Am I getting that right?
Yes, that's correct. Exactly. What's happening is by creating some distance, first remembering the memory in the way it originally occurred, and then processing the sensation or the body sensations and reducing them starts to create some emotional distance. Almost like first I can feel it in my body, and then next time through the memory, I kind of see it like I'm watching it on a movie screen. And then I go through and I create a new way of maybe the way I wanted the memory to work instead. So somebody came in and saved me, or the car didn't end up crashing. I ended up going down a beautiful country road, okay, as a for instance. And then I experienced the positive sensations of that experience. And now when I think on the memory, I can actually go, oh, yeah, I remember the crash happened, but I don't have that attachment to the feeling anymore. Because in my brain was able to resolve seeing the memory in a different way. It removed the emotional sensations that were connected to it.
Yeah. Even hearing you say that or hearing you talk about it, that's a very natural process too. How many times do you guys sit here as an adult and think about some things that happened to you as a child that really bothered you, and like now you're like, that really wasn't that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, if that would have happened to me now, you know, I might do like X, Y, or Z, right?
Yep.
Gosh, even just like while I'm sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, you go back to like grade school and someone cut you in line, right? And you're like, this is like the worst thing. Like, I had this injustice was done to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you tell the teacher and they just brush you off. Not that big a deal. Get over it, kind of thing. You're like, nobody cares about this. I go home, tell my parents. They're like, okay. Like, they don't care. Like, nobody cares that this terrible thing was done to me. And then now, 25 years later, sitting here thinking about it, you know, that was probably okay. I wouldn't react that same way. It wouldn't really bother me as much. Like, that'd be the same type of thing where mm-hmm. that really bothered me at the time, but I went through a process of natural uncoupling and reconsolidation of it. Whereas if someone would have bumped me in line right now, it's like, well, okay, like it's going to take me two more seconds to get through the line or whatever, to get my lunch or whatever.
A lot of what happens in traditional top-down therapy is we're doing it at the cognitive level. But with trauma, mm-hmm. because it's so much in the body, what we're doing is we're taking that same idea and we're combining it with the bilateral stimulation. So it's happening while the emotional activation mm-hmm. is going on in the body so that it can work with trauma too in a way that helps to move it out of the system mm-hmm. and take that natural ability that we have for perspective and body sensations to separate them out.
And plug that into something that's really intense.
Yes.
Right, which is something exactly. that we might not purposely do on our own.
Right.
Right.
Memory reconsolidation works essentially because you can't have two competing ideas in the same memory at the same time and have them both be true.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's the mismatch experience that you're talking about. And as you talk about being on the playground or now, that created a mismatch. So now the amygdala says, aha, both things can't be true at the same time. What do I do with that? So it has to recompile the information to the body sensation back to the hippocampus. So that's beautiful how that is so important.
Right. Yeah. And so having a positive emotional sensation that we can connect to helps to solidify the ability for us to see it a little bit differently and feel it in our body differently. And that helps to create that uncoupling or that decoupling effect. And then we don't have the same emotional attachment to it.
And you've built up this positive neural network and you've sat in it longer. So not only is pruning or the dying off of the negative network we don't want, now we're reinforcing and building on these positive sensations. Tell me about the pleasant sensation. What was that like? And people freak out. They're like, oh my gosh, in 15 minutes, it's like the accident didn't. I'm not sick. I feel fine. Like I can think about it, talk about it. I drove home in my car, and the song came on, and I was fine.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing how profoundly deep that can affect somebody's day-to-day life when you start uncoupling these bad experiences.
Definitely, I think that there's something I want to rewind and just define because I feel like I didn't do a good job of this before. I don't know if we talked about it on another episode or not, or I don't recall if we did. The bilateral stimulation, whenever we're talking about that, a way that a therapist might invoke that is a couple different ways. I think one of the most common ways is tapping, right? So you might have these two little pads in your hand that vibrate. One vibrates, then releases, and the other one vibrates. So they're going back and forth. Or they might use lights, or sometimes therapists use their fingers to go back and forth to kind of stimulate that. So the bilateral stimulation is, for simplicity's sake, it's just getting, since our brain is crosswired, right, the right part affects the left side of the body and vice versa, you're basically forcing your brain, or allowing your brain, to kind of go into that space by tapping into the vibrations or tapping or lights or anything, so that it's easier for you to get there in session. I just was sitting here thinking, I was like, oh, I don't know if we actually said it. We could be saying bilateral stimulation. People are like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Right.
So like if you're walking.
Eyes moving walking back and forth.
Yeah. Movement, anything left to right is going to be bilateral. And what's more important about when we're activating that, we're also activating that subconscious or that early programming. So as we talk about any of these therapies, that's what these therapies are doing in trauma work. That's a little bit different than DBT, CBT, things like that. We're tapping into subconscious and bringing that to the conscious level.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, right?
Absolutely.
So that you feel like that that resolution therapy is a little more closely linked to EMDR than somatic experiencing is, or do you think they're all kind of equidistant?
I think they're kind of equidistant. It's a different way of doing bilateral stimulation and using other therapeutic techniques combined with the traditional EMDR model. The protocol is a little bit different, and it doesn't have the same eight phases, but and it's more visually oriented generally as far as how it's approached. But in my experience, like anything else, some clients take to it better than EMDR, and some clients EMDR is a little bit easier to take to. It really, some people are not as visually focused or visually oriented, and that can be a barrier to some extent.
I think the advantage of the resolution therapy is if someone floods too much or has too much of an emotional charge, this allows you to break it up and pendulate or shift a little bit more. So that might be more effective with some clients too, not just the visual component.
Yeah, one of the big thing of the developer of this method was that's what she found, that people were getting resolution faster, because sometimes what can happen with EMDR is they can feel a little overwhelmed in their body, and EMDR, the traditional model, doesn't have a standard way of focusing that and processing that out. And she developed an accelerated resolution therapy. That's part of her protocol, is to focus on those physical sensations and try and move them out before you continue forward with the actual memory piece. So it kind of pendulates back and forth, like somatic experiencing, pendulates back and forth between the memory itself and the sensations, and the memory and the sensations, to allow people to move through it in a way that feels a little bit more natural, similar to the natural rhythms of our, how our body can tolerate emotion.
I want to even just take a moment while we're talking about this. A lot of times whenever people think of trauma work and they think of revisiting some of these times, it's a really terrifying thing. And it's terrifying for good reason. Your body's telling you that it's terrifying, right? Your brain's telling you it's terrifying. As Nicole and Peter talked about, right? You get overwhelmed, you get flooded, right? It's really intense. A lot of trauma therapy, just like we talked about before, I just want to continue to remind that a lot of it is about producing safety and keeping that safety, which is the thing that allows people to go through and do this work, right? As long as that safety is there, it's easier to go to these places, because as things get intense and as you get flooded, it means that you aren't in that place as much. You can get out quicker. I think that's really important, right? Because if you're asking me to go out on the edge of a cliff and I'm like, well, is the path, you know, tie a rope to me or something like that so that if right. I fall, you can pull me back up. Mm-hmm. I feel a little bit better whenever, you know, I got a rope tied on me.
Yeah.
It makes it a little bit easier to go out on that cliff, right? It's not the same type of risk. And I want to put that out there because I think that some people may be listening to this and they're like, oh, so you want me to come in and talk about it? How about not? And it's not. It's not that. There are times where you are talking about it, but you're talking about it with a little more of that safety net, which you don't have outside of therapy.
Not only is it safety, we're teaching so many skills. I do at least 6 to 10 weeks of skills, not only safety.
Like the resourcing.
How to pendulate, how to titrate or break things down into small manageable parts. We're applying psychoeducation and skills and teaching. So by the time these people have dipped their foot in the pool, they're ready to swim a little bit. We're not diving in the deep end yet, but we just put our feet in and our legs in and we kind of notice how are we doing, and as we get better at that, then we start diving in. And we never start with the worst trauma or the most difficult or old trauma. We would start with little things, you know, something that aggravated you or something that's a light thing that you could manage till you get comfortable with the process. We want you to be comfortable and feel safe,
and that's typical of good trauma therapy, is that it is the stepping process, right? You're, you know, it's not like you know, you're not skydiving. Right?
No.
It's like, oh, okay, well, if you're skydiving the first time, let's maybe show you how the parachute works. Let's show you how to pack it and everything. This is the plane. This is how high we'll go. Maybe we'll start off by like jumping off just a little bit higher ledge, teach you how to land, right? You're doing that whole build up until you get to the place where it's like, all right, we're in the plane. Is this something you're ready to do? Are you ready to jump out and have this parachute work for you? Then you'd be like, all right, I am ready. I went through all these steps that I've been more prepared for it.
Yeah, I like that metaphor because there is that building up piece so that you feel by the time you get up in the plane and you think about jumping, you're ready to jump, you've gotten all of the skills necessary to know what's going to happen, how you're going to do it, what you can do. And in many cases, you're not jumping by yourself the first time. You're actually tied to somebody else who's actually controlling everything, and you're going through the experience before maybe you do it completely by yourself.
If you get to pull that parachute, they'll pull it for you.
That's right. And here's the other piece. If at any point in time before you jump off that plane, you say, you know what, I don't want to do it today, I'm not ready for it, we say, fine, that's great. Let's go back down and let's work on some skills, and then maybe we'll come back some other day when you're ready to do so. Mm-hmm. The other piece about it, too, that is so important about both EMDR and accelerated resolution therapy and even somatic experiencing in a lot of cases is we don't have to hear the whole story. You don't have to talk through everything that happened in this particular trauma or the traumas that have happened.
Isn't this prolonged exposure?
No, it's not.
No, exactly. It's absolutely not.
And that's what's so beautiful and I think so safe for clients. The two things that I think help to make it safe for clients, in addition to everything else we've talked about, is the client doesn't have to share with me all of the details of what happened in order for them to get the healing that they're looking for. They do it in their own imagination, in their own mind, to the extent that they want to, they can, and they can tolerate, and they're willing to go through it. Also, at any point in time during any of these processes, if they say, you know what, I'm feeling a little overwhelmed, I want to stop, we go, great, let's stop here, and then let's talk about it. And we stop. The client is always in control of where we go, how far we go, and to what extent.
We're not pushed out of the plane.
We are not pushing them out of the plane.
No.
They get to decide all the time. They're always in the lead. We're just following along, facilitating, and we're always on that safety, either the safety rope if you're going down a cliff, or we're the ones with the main parachute, and they're the ones, you know, going along with us.
Another level of that, Pete, I think is so important. Not only are you not jumping alone, that's kind of like the therapist being with you. So, you know, we bring who we are and that safety and that relationship that we've developed, that rapport, and our nervous system connecting to mirroring. I see that you're nervous. I see that you're scared, and I'm here, right now. And sometimes that's what people did not have. So that attunement is really the key to bringing that facilitation of healing. That's really an important piece.
I'm listening to you guys talk about it. That's interesting. So the way that I address trauma therapy is very different than you guys, because I work with couples. So I work with trauma therapy with two people in the room already and with me. So once you work with a couple and they get to the place where they are safe for each other, it becomes so much easier to work with trauma, because not only am I someone that they feel like they can trust, but their spouse, who is a lot more important than me, is someone that they can trust. And it's like, oh, I can show you this awful piece of me, and you're still going to love me. You're still going to care about me. And it's a beautiful thing whenever it happens.
Yeah.
But that is a terrifying thing, because a lot of people, some of the reasons that they do have trauma is because someone close to them has hurt them.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the risk of doing that again is really, really high. So that would be a case where it would be harder to do that kind of trauma.
Yeah, and the deeper the trauma, or the younger the trauma, when the people didn't have the resources when they're younger, that, like, especially with Pete and I working with complex and developmental trauma, makes it really complicated. So we want to break these things down into some manageable pieces. Mm-hmm. That's really important.
Yeah, and we talked about polyvagal theory in the past a little bit. The whole point of shifting out of that fight or flight response is when we have safety and we know somebody's there with us, it by its very nature tells our nervous system that we're okay and helps to slow down that activation in the body, that sense of, oh, I can't handle, I don't know if I can make it. Knowing somebody's there helps us to feel safer, to feel whatever we need to feel. So your example with a couple, I think, is so right on in that that's why that model also works so well.
Oh, yeah. I've had couples that have had profound things happen in resolution around trauma because that person can be that safe place for me whenever they, you know, whenever I'm showing this piece. And it, just like you guys probably experience in your sessions, whenever you see that transformation, you're like, oh my gosh, this is a really cool thing.
This is awesome. This is what we live for.
Yeah, yeah.
And on my wall, when you come in my computer, it shows a neuron. And all I care about every time when people come in and they think I'm crazy at first, right?
I think you're a nerd with the neurons
nerd
on
out.
Your wall.
I'm like, all I care about, and what the most important thing is, if you fire and wire new neural connections that are positive and you feel safe and connected and have skills to be able to navigate the world out there, that is giving somebody a gift that keeps on giving. I love it. That's why I do the work. That's my favorite piece. Yeah.
Yeah, and all we're doing is facilitating the capacity for somebody to
that's
do that
right.
within their own system.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, whenever they think of trauma therapy, they think of the old way. And we talked about that. And I know there's some practitioners that still do this to varying degrees of success, depending on how much safety is in the room, that, you know, the prolonged exposure that we were talking about before. I know it's different now than it used to be. But I think that a lot of people, they go to, oh, I'm going to have to just tell the traumatic experience over and over and over and over again. And I think one of the wonderful things is you guys are saying that, no, trauma therapy now, we don't really do that kind of thing.
The research has shown profound difference in lasting change immediately and long term is to not. And in some cases, you know, with certain phobias, in vivo exposure can be quite helpful. But with these complex traumas, that is not the best approach, I think, in my opinion, because it's re-triggering that amygdala repeatedly.
Well, and not only that, even if it does become a good approach over time, it takes too long.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It takes a long, long
time. Memory consolidation is 5 minutes, and it works. And I do it daily. I love it. It's been life-changing, you know, using it in my own personal life as well. I think a lot of the tools that we do and share, mm-hmm. you know, we use that in our own lives. So I think that's important. You know, I don't ask my clients to do anything I haven't personally tried or experienced or try to see what it feels like as a person, you know, not mm-hmm. just as the clinician. I think that's important too.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing that we want to talk about is somatic experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Can you guys share with me a little bit about that and how that helps resolve trauma?
Somatic experiencing is definitely a bottom-up processing. So it's very much about being in the body. You could think of it as kind of like mindfulness kind of squared, multiplied X number of times exponentially, in that it's about really tuning into the stress response and how it feels in the body and where we feel what we feel in the body, and then helping the client to understand where they are in the stress response, where they're getting stuck, and then completing the stress response the way the body naturally does. You mentioned earlier about animals and how they have their own way of, you know, moving through things. That's how somatic experiencing was developed, was watching animals in the wild and how they, you know, after a traumatic, if they survive another animal attack, how they kind of shake it off. They just shake for a little bit and then move around, then run, and it's out. It's over and done. And by studying that and then studying the physiology in mammals and in people and working on this over a long time, Peter Levine, also collaborating with Stephen Porges in the polyvagal theory, how he came to understand how all of that plays out in the body and helped people. He stumbled across memory reconsolidation as a part of it. So as we're releasing some of these trauma responses in the body, we're also feeling the implicit memories will bubble up, like the belief that I had when I was shaking as a kid because I was so terrified about, you know, what was going on with mom and dad arguing in the other room. I believed it wasn't safe or that something was going to happen to me. Getting those memories up and then getting a different memory, getting some different perspective, and then releasing the energy that's in the body allows me to understand that that's an experience I had as a kid. I now can move. I don't have to feel stuck or frozen because now my body knows what to do when I start feeling that. I can move the energy out, get rid of the negative memory or belief or cognition that I have, and I now have a different experience. It essentially moves it out of that amygdala and allows us to see the world in a different way and experience our emotions differently.
Mm-hmm. Because that same thing won't happen the same way to me.
That's right.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Right now while I'm in this safe place.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that one of the things that you're talking about, the completing the stress response, that is so key. So many of these techniques that we're talking about is centered around us completing that stress response because it can be such an ongoing thing for those of us that experience any type of trauma. And the experiencing the stress response and then getting to the end is your body's way, like Pete was saying, of getting rid of all of that energy. And once that energy is done, then that reinforcing process that happens all the time doesn't have to be reinforced anymore.
Right. We're breaking the loop.
Yeah.
The negative loop that keeps happening over and over with the triggering, we're actually breaking it. We're removing the memory that's connected to it, allowing the energy to discharge out of the body so it doesn't get activated anymore, which allows the amygdala then release the part that's wired in.
Do you know how you get a song stuck out of your head?
Listen to it.
All the way through.
All the way through.
That's right.
That's a great example.
Break the loop. I don't know. That just came to me.
But I love what he said about
the music guys over here. Like, of course I know how to do that.
No, but I think that's really good what you said about the feedback loop, because I don't hear a lot of people talking about that. And there is this feedback loop, not only in the body into the brain, mm-hmm. but we have a thought, then we have a feeling, and it triggers back and forth. So to get that out, when someone tremors, that epinephrine is literally just coming. I mean, you can see it. You can feel it, either heat up your neck or down your arms or tingling, burning. We want them to describe and kind of let that come out of their body. And as they notice it's coming up, they can even get ahead of it going forward if something else is a trigger. So what I find is as you do this work with clients, not only did they release these, now they're so proactive on other minor things, they really don't even need to go through the whole process anymore. The body's wanting to naturally keep doing that. It wants to repeat itself. So I think that's really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And it's similar to what you were talking about earlier in creating the safety, part of the safety around this early on in the session is teaching people that not only can I learn to be comfortable with emotional discomfort, but I also can teach my body that there is emotional comfort and positive sensations that I can experience in my body, and that teaches us to move between discomfort and comfort, discomfort and comfort. Yeah. And we widen that window of tolerance because we learn that we can experience both. So often in trauma, we're so used to feeling negative and that the body is the enemy that it becomes difficult to want to stay in. But when I know that that's not my only experience, I'm more willing to test the waters a little bit and begin to understand that I can feel both.
Yeah, not only that, but it can be pleasurable on the outside of that discomfort.
Absolutely.
Right? It's the way I think about it, it's like no different than social interactions, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it could be scary at first, and then all of a sudden you go and start talking to people and start meeting people, and you're like, oh, like this was really uncomfortable at first. Then, oh, it gets a little bit easier. Hey, this is nice. I never met this person. Oh, we become really good friends. I would have never done that if I would not have gone outside my comfort zone and done that. And it sounds like it's just really the same with trauma work too.
Yeah, and the sayings in somatic experiencing are pendulation and titration. So we touch into the trauma feeling just a little bit, and then we come back out of it and feel positive, or swing the pendulum back into more comfort or soothing or something that's a little bit more tolerable and pleasurable. Mm-hmm. And then we swing back a little bit more. And each time the pendulum swings a little bit farther in both directions. And just by nature, we can then go deeper and deeper into the body and feel that and be okay with it and release that energy that gets stuck.
I think of that right at Six Flags, as you say, the pendulation. I can kind of, you know, it starts swinging, you're like, oh, okay. And then it starts going up higher, and you're like, woo, and, you know, it starts to feel better. It's kind of like that in clients. You can almost see it come over their face and their body, you know, as it rocks from the left to the right. Do you guys know what this ride is? I can't think of it.
The Buccaneer?
Yes. It just swings. And finally, you're like,
it was the
oh,
Joker
this is
at Six Flags for years. I don't know if it still
okay.
is.
Okay.
The Buccaneer is the old. I'm giving away a little of my age
That's
here.
That's the one I know. But that feels kind of nice, and it's so amazing to watch that come over someone's facial expressions and their body. It's fascinating, isn't it, to watch it?
It is, and what's so interesting about that, too, is I even had a client today, fairly new client, who we were talking about this idea, and he had, you know, we pendulated a couple of times in session, and he was saying, yeah, you know, I don't know how to describe. And so I said, well, what's interesting is joy, happiness, and excitement in our nervous system is both a sympathetic or fight or flight kind of feeling, and it's parasympathetic simultaneously. And when we're not used to feeling both at the same time, it can be very disorienting initially. But the more we get used to it, the more we're like, oh, wow, this is awesome. This is great. This feels wonderful. And that elation and trusting that it's not negative, and it actually being activated and feeling your body tingle can actually feel really good and be part of life, experiencing life in a very positive way, is wonderful. And that's what I hear you referring to.
I was even
to.
Thinking of the videos of this little baby, and the mom's either like sneezing or laughing or coughing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the baby's like really like terrified, has a response. And then she's like, it's okay, honey. And then, you know, the little girl's like, oh, and then she's
giggling. And she starts laughing. Yeah,
like,
they start laughing
seconds.
Together.
So it's amazing mm-hmm. that's that parasympathetic, sympathetic.
I hate
that's
those
really
videos.
Good.
Oh. Going through emotionally focused therapy training for the work I do with couples, they show you a bunch of videos like that with different babies, and it just like breaks your heart, right? They show you like what happens whenever you like still face someone
oh,
that's trying
yeah,
to share it with you,
no, that's
and you're
different.
Just like, don't do that to your child.
And you have a little one, so we definitely can relate.
Oh yeah. Or how in tune children can be, right? Mm-hmm. If you're suffering from trauma and you're around your child all the time, they will know.
Their
nervous system will wire to that.
That's right.
And that's one of the ways that trauma can pass down, which is why it's like so important that if you're experiencing trauma, there's hope on the other side of it, right? It's not something you're stuck with for life. You know, it's not loads you have to carry around with you for the rest of your life. And the brain has natural ways of being able to address it. And, you know, a lot of times in our culture, the way that we think of addressing things is taking a drink, taking a pill. This is the ways of addressing it. And while maybe that stuff does help for a little bit, it's not the long-term solution. There is resolution. You have to let your brain do the work. And doing it in a safe environment is the thing that will help you get to the place that you need. So I think that I know that there's more around trauma that we can talk about. And maybe we'll as we continue this trauma series and trauma talk. But I want to thank you guys for joining me here today. And thank you guys for tuning in today and listening to our trauma series here on Mental Health Insights. We hope that you join us next time when we continue these kind of conversations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to our show. This podcast is designed to provide accurate and reliable information, and those that appear on the show are all licensed professionals in the area of mental health counseling. We are in no way rendering legal or medical advice, only information to help serve you better in making decisions in your life. If you need a professional, you should find one. The music you are listening to is called Lobby Time, and that is by Kevin MacLeod and licensed through Creative Commons.